I didn't sell myself short and overlook anything that was just staring right there in front of me, so to speak.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Ben Uzo, pro personnel scout for the Toronto Raptors. Coach Uzo enjoyed an impressive playing career, starring at the University of Tulsa, where he finished as one of the program's all-time leaders in points, assists, and steals. He went on to play in the NBA with the New Jersey Nets, Cleveland Cavaliers, as well as the Toronto Raptors, including recording a triple-double in his final NBA game. His professional journey took him overseas, competing in top leagues in Europe, Africa, as well as Asia, and also representing the Nigerian national team in the Olympics. After transitioning from player to evaluator, Coach Uzo brought his deep understanding of the game to the Raptors front office, where he now focuses on pro personnel scouting and player evaluation. His experience spans both through the court and the boardroom, giving him a unique perspective on talent identification and development. On this episode, we discuss the coaches from his past who have made a lasting impact on his career and how, the different scouting roles in the NBA and what each role entails, as well as some green and red flags to watch for when you're scouting a player, on top of how to incorporate data analytics into your scouting processes. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Ben Uzo. Dr. Dish Basketball is revolutionizing basketball training with the number one selling shooting machine in the world. Our innovative systems are the only training solutions that deliver more reps, motivation, and fun, empowering coaches and players to elevate their game faster than ever before. Featuring advanced analytics, immersive game-like features, and an easy-to-use interface, our state-of-the-art shooting machines are the preferred choice for progressive teams worldwide. Welcome, coaches, and thanks everyone for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. You have your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, here today, and we are joined with the pro personnel scout for the Toronto Raptors, Coach Ben Uzo. Coach Uzo, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
Yeah, I appreciate y'all having me, man. Hopefully I can give y'all what you need, and hopefully it could be a mutual experience, man.
Nah, just be yourself, man. That'd be enough. I already know. Dougie, you don't know yet, but this dude is a real one. So I've been excited for this one, man. Appreciate you jumping on.
Sure.
No, it's great, especially with you. You have great experiences. Like I said, I wasn't even joking when I said that before. Like, you've had great experiences, one, from coming as a player, but then two, now you're on the coaching side of things. So at least you have a whole perspective of seeing different sides of the ball. With you specifically, you've had a unique journey from the NBA, playing all around the world, and now transitioning into a scouting position with the Raptors, being in the NBA. When you look back at the full arc of your career, going from a player to a coach, and just the young career that you've had so far, like, what is there anything that stands out to you the most that kind of helps you right now in your pro personnel scouting position?
I think I'll take everything, you know, specific lessons and experiences from the years that I played. You just learn different lessons. Your mind grows. You grow as a human. You evolve overall as a man. And the things that I thought about once I graduated and started playing pro evolved and changed gratefully by the time I finished my playing career. So there's different moments that I may reflect upon that may allow me to utilize those specific experiences when I'm either evaluating talent or I'm mentoring a young kid here in San Antonio and just giving advice to different kids that are trying to play on the continent of Africa.
What's the number one thing? Obviously, you finish college, you get a chance to play different spots around the world. Like, what's the number one thing your playing experience professionally taught you that you've now carried over into what you do in terms from a scouting perspective?
From a scouting perspective is, I would say, the number one thing that I've taken is to not cancel out, I guess, the extreme cases. When I say extreme cases, a kid that may be undersized 1 year, then all of a sudden they've hit a growth spurt and like they have a crazy story about them. And so you have these cases that sometimes are overlooked are not looked at enough, are not paid attention to thoroughly. And so I think between the extreme cases and the patience that's required, I think those two things I like be mindful of and remind myself to just ask that question or those two questions. Am I patient? And is this an extreme, unique case?
Yeah, because you can't sometimes that you can't like rely on those first or second impressions. Sometimes it's a sixth or seventh impression that you need to actually get the full story.
Yeah,
because sometimes guys can rule a kid out because he doesn't just jump either off the court at him or off the screen in that first impression. So you actually got to help, like you said, stand patient. You actually got to track a guy's whole journey.
Yeah.
Get the full story.
Got to follow the breadcrumbs backwards and try to fill in the gaps for yourself. And then just make sure you ask the questions. Okay, have I filled in all the gaps? Have I looked at this painting long enough to see it from this angle, this other angle, this angle, this, and then lastly, this angle? And so that's the things that I try to continue to refine for myself in this side, on the scouting side.
I like using the painting as a reference too. That's actually, because especially, not that I'm a big art person, but you go and see art. Yeah, you can see a 100 different things by just looking at one picture. So that's a great way to put it. To give everybody an idea of your career, you go on from Tulsa, you go on starting the NBA with the Nets, the Cavs, the Raptors. I know you take multiple different stints in different countries, Russia, Mexico, Belgium, France, South Africa, Venezuela, the G League stints as well. So it's like you have seen different sides and different areas. And I don't know if there's people out there listening. Different countries play different ways too. So you've definitely seen different styles of play and different coaching methods. Is there any particular, and you don't have to say their name if you don't want to, but like any coaching or coaching styles out there that made a lasting impact on you, on your development, or at least your mindset as a player from any of the countries?
That's a great question. I think I was fortunate enough to be coached well in college by my head coach, Doug Wood. A passionate guy. So that prepared me for probably life. And then I think that the coaches that stand out the most for me, I think my NBA coaches, I had Avery Johnson, strong African-American male. I had also Byron Scott, my time in Cleveland, African-American male. And then my last stop in the league with the Toronto Raptors, Dwayne Casey, a very male with great degree. I think all four of those college coaches and the three coaches that I named, they helped just plant seeds of different things that just allowed me to continue to grow, evolve, and refine myself to where I am now. And if I had to throw just one more coach out there, I think Will Voigt, who's an assistant at BYU, but he was my coach on the Olympic team in 2016. And we just did a lot of really cool things together. But at that season of my life, he was really impactful for me. So I think those are the coaches that, along with their style, I think their personalities, their approach really just helped galvanize me and help me just mold me in the way that I am, I think, today.
Yeah, no, I love that. Those are all those guys. I don't know Will, but I'm aware of the other guys. And I know Doug personally. You've been surrounded by truth tellers.
Yeah.
In your career. Those are all those are all truth tellers, man. And I'm sure Will, for you to say that about him, is the same. And even the time we all spent around Coach Brown doing the Team Nigeria stuff with Mike Brown, that's another guy in his own way, incredible truth teller.
Yeah.
In terms of, and that's, it's amazing how that's what you have to be able to do in your role now is when you go sit down in a room and in your meetings, you've got to give people the whole story. So while you're taking that same patience to evaluate it yourself, then being able to relay that to the room. And sometimes it's, you may be the only one in the room that feels a certain way about a guy and then be willing to stand on that.
Yeah, stand, convey it in a way that is digestible so that people could maybe see the painting in a different angle that you see it. And so they can also make just important decisions.
So I asked this earlier. I was talking with Mage, and I was curious, and I'm sure somebody else is probably curious out there. So for your title, you're a pro personnel scout. I know in the NBA, there are like a bunch of different scouts, right? There's like international scouts. There's, as you are, a personnel scout. And so just, can you give like a differentiator from what a personnel scout is in comparison to more looking international and all the different versions of scouting? Can you narrow down as to what you're looking for and what the type of players that you look at are?
I think international scout, if I start there, you mainly have your eye and lens on the international market. And that's from grassroots all the way to the pro level on the international side. That's their main focus. It's not their only focus. Now, when we, every organization is different. So when our organization, we are all hands on deck approach. So then we may fill in the gaps wherever it needs, but our main areas of focus are our job title. So for me, I'm a pro player personnel. I look at pro, NBA, I also G League. There's 90 jobs that have been created in recent years. Two-way contracts. Each team is allowed three. And so you have about, 30 teams. And so you have 96 just new. So that range is where I try to cover, as well as college. Guys who are on the horizon of being NBA prospects. Then you have, you have other titles, but you have the high school market, because there's more high school sanctioned, pro-sanctioned events that our personnel can now travel and be at. And be live at. And so you have those main three buckets that are really broken down, that we break down together as a whole. But our focus may be more catered to one of those three areas.
Yeah, so pretty much like the amateur stuff between, which is like high school and college. I see you guys hit the EYBL and Adidas and all the summer circuits. You guys are out as much in July as the college guys are in terms of covering that stuff. And then obviously your pro personnel side, then the international. So it sounds like, I'm sure every organization's different, but you guys sound really collaborative.
Yeah.
As far as how y'all try to approach it, as opposed to international guys stay in your lane, pro personnel guys stay in your lane. But you literally have the art gallery approach in the room, because sometimes the international guy may have an opinion on somebody that you bring up they're in the pro personnel scope, but it could be an international player.
Yeah.
So now the international person has an opinion maybe because they've seen that guy come up through the grassroots level, but now he's in a pro personnel kind of conversation. So that's where the collaboration I can see will come in.
Yeah. One of those things that is a healthy overlap, if you want another term to call it. So it's surgical integration in a different way. But yeah, every organization is different.
Yeah, no, that definitely helps. Because like I said, for me, at least it described it for me. And then I was curious myself, but I find it interesting. So you're saying international scouts do look at international. They look at youth as well, not just like guys who are older or in college, or not college, but more in the pros already overseas. Like, they're looking at internationals as well, internationals, a youth as well.
Yeah, there's the umbrella, from, like I said, from the youth standpoint, meaning the guys overseas, they may start playing and be integrated with a club at 14, 15, 16 years old. And it's like one of the youngest players in EuroLeague at 15, 16 years old. And you have his clock starts. So you want to get your eyes on a guy who's highly touted it like that as soon as you can. And obviously we understand the kind of player and talent that he's evolved into today. But imagine if you saw him scratching the surface at 16, and you have this great wealth of understanding of who he is, where he comes from, how he trains, what his family's about, as opposed to seeing him pop up at 20 or 18 or 19, and you may be 2 years behind. You have a great opportunity to get a head start on guys if you tout them early. And so that's just how different organizations go about it.
Yeah, typically with the international kids, their competition, I won't say it starts at U16, but typically that's like that target range when they really start getting into some of the international stuff in terms of FIBA having tournaments. That U16 level is typically when you really start to see guys on the radar. Not that's the first time you hear about them, but I know that's when they first really start to step into the competition in terms of whether it's World Cup or some of the different championship competitions available.
That's a visible avenue, as well as some of those 15-year-old guys. They're also being recruited to be a part of the youth program of a Real Madrid on these various countries in that way. So they're being conversations that are being had at an early age. They're being pegged out. They're literally being, I'll take you. Club to a great tradition by the early age.
No, that's definitely interesting. That does make a point going back to when you were saying about you want to know the full perspective of a recruit or a scout. Like that gives a good idea of it for sure. And then I guess off of that, though, you find the kids, we'll say, now for you, of course, you're looking for more people in the States and more in the NBA looking for like kind of trades. But when you're looking at people, is there any red flags? Is there anything that you see that you're like, no, this is definitely something that we don't want to go after a kid? I know you said a lot about like their personal history, their growing up, their attitude, all of that obviously is a huge thing that falls under the umbrella. But is there anything that you have seen, and you don't have to go into necessarily specifics, but just some like key things you look for beyond the stat sheet that really stand out to you when scouting a player?
Yeah, there's different mechanisms that, you know, you may factor in, like if a kid's injury history is unique. When I say unique, meaning that they have had very major injuries for their age and be concerned from a long-term just availability standpoint. And then just how they're able to learn. And there's different metrics that you can utilize to be able to find out, learn, and pick up information. And those things could be something that steer you away from a kid or a prospect that you've grown to understand or that you've had circle on your radar for quite a while. So those are the two things. And those other things, I think those are probably the things that, you know, I would factor in as far as like being deterred or, as you guys say, red flags.
What could coaches at the college level learn if they could steal one thing from NBA scouts, from the idea of doing background and intel? Because right now, literally at the college level, is like it's speed dating in the springtime in terms of recruiting with the portal. Like you're trying to know as much as you can about as many guys as you can in a short period of time. But touch on that. Like if college coaches could steal one or two nuggets from you guys in terms of maybe what kind of intel, or I'm not trying to come up with a cheat code here, but I think you see where I'm going with this. What could guys learn from you guys from an intel and background perspective, knowing that their windows aren't as maybe long or as much, maybe not having as much time as you guys have to do?
I think people prioritize things. What's important to me may not be as important to you, but I think, or to just general speaking, what's important to me may not be important to the next man or the next coach. I think the thing that could, I guess the area that could be overlooked is maybe the way players have been recruited normally. With the change in the NIL, and the change in the whole business of how college players or international players are being recruited, that gap that can be further understood to try to get yourself the best head start on a kid as possible. I think that's the biggest thing that would, from my personal approach, I would try to better healthily understand as best I can. Because I think that's like heartbeat of everything at this point. There's not as many mandates in place in that regard. I think relationships matter, and just understanding and educating yourself on how to like navigate that NIL landscape, because so many different things are changing. It's just a difference. I played college almost 20 years ago now, so NIL wasn't available. I was mentoring a kid in the gym yesterday, and he said, would you have changed college decision? Factored a lot of things in to have to possibly have changed my college decision.
See if this was involved.
No doubt, yeah.
Miles was a good negotiator, so yeah. I think for me, just understanding the question that you just asked, that's something that I would try to healthily understand, because they're doing a great job. Families are more prepared, and they're doing a great job of preparing their prospects or their kids, their sons or their daughters for the opportunity. So the leverage has changed. And so you have to factor that in. So the research in that area, I think, place that I would start, because I think it's a little overlooked. And I can imagine there's a lot of discrepancies for, as far as what's real and what's fake, because it's still such a new, unsettled pathway right now.
Yeah, no, for sure. Especially when you have agents in the middle of those, I guess, legitimately what you could call now negotiations. Right. You're trying to find out, is that 200,000, what you're saying, school X is throwing out there, is that really the deal?
Yeah.
Or is it not? No, you're right. It's a lot of moving parts. And the thing is still evolving.
You know? Yeah, still evolving. You have to grow with it.
Yeah, and the rev share stuff is kicking in now, too. It's, this whole thing has still got some shifting to go before it's all said and done.
It's so crazy that you mentioned that, too, to actually sit there and think about, if we would have had NIL. I graduated college in, 2017, 8 years ago. If we would have had NIL, even at the Division III level, it's there right now. There's kids in the I'm in a – PAC is essentially a small Division III conference. There's kids getting paid right now, making like over $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. So it's – now I know, understand that's not necessarily the millions that other kids are making, but it completely changed the landscape. Your whole life could have been completely different off of just this one rule, which is – it's insane to really think about it.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's a lot to think about. It's a lot to factor in. You got to adjust on the fly. You know, me looking back, it'd have been, it's a great opportunity that I definitely would have capitalized on. But it's cool. It's cool to see that these young men and women, they have a great chance to just obviously capitalize on for their family better than later, for sure.
I would think too, as you guys are evaluating prospects potentially, part of the intel and some of the background is how they handle that, you know, and what their circle is like in terms of, because now when you throw money into people, guys have always had their people and their circles.
Yeah.
But now when you throw a big pile of money into these circles with these people, some of that intel has got to be valuable for you guys to figure out, all right, is this kid still the same kid before all this came about, or how has that money changed them? And has it changed them for the better? Have they handled it great? You know, because it doesn't always have to be a bad outcome. I think people focus too much on, there's probably more kids making great decisions with it than poor ones. But yeah. I think you guys getting that intel has got to be a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's definitely factor in. You understand, kids will be kids, boys will be boys in that way. There's grace that's given, but there's also a firm boundary that you got to draw for yourself and your organization when you trying to understand what kind of character you're bringing in or would like to bring into your team, to your ball club. Yes, yeah, it's a lot more conversations they have around the NIL and the growing landscape of how, you know, college kids are handling themselves in regards to the NIL shift.
It's just, honestly, it's crazy to me to even think about it half the time now. And like before, I know people would always say a lot of programs are, obviously they're ran by the coaches' staff, and they still are. But nowadays, I feel like the person who's the main donor to a program, like I've seen it recently, there was a school, I won't necessarily say it because I know it was a touchy point for him, but there was a school, Division II school, that they had a major donor who just ran out the coaches and ran out everybody because he wasn't a fan of them all. He had all the money. He was the one who was basically running that program. So it's who's really running the program at some places now. It's interesting. It's definitely interesting. I want to talk a little bit about how, asking before, when you're looking at people, we talked about the green and red flags essentially, but now on the flip side of the coin, more basketball oriented, how much of the scouting process is based on like the analytics, the data that you find, going in depth onto the details? Do you guys utilize analytics a ton for that, or do you go off what you see, just more the eye test?
There's a combination of both. There's analytics that we use. There's also the eye test that we factor in. And it changes from organization to organization. My personal process is a combination of both. I'm definitely an eye test guy, but I also factor in analytics to an extent. Now, I probably didn't even know I factored in analytics until I probably had a conversation a couple of months ago at Summer League. But there are different things that both sides provide a benefit towards when you're evaluating a prospect or a group of athletes or a group of prospects. So it has a benefit on both. But analytics, very important. It's created a whole new lane for people to really bring value, man. It's good for them.
I got a question for you, Ben. I heard Rick Carlisle say this in an interview a couple of days ago. He talked about how the NBA has changed. And it's actually, you'll be able to address this question because your time in the NBA several years ago, even to how it's evolved now, and the league is, you could argue that the NBA of all the three major sports, probably even hockey included, if you want to throw four, the NBA is probably the most, the sport that evolves the most out of the three or four major sports. But Rick Carlisle said in this conversation, he called it, the NBA has now become a play hard league. And what he meant by that was because rosters are changing. You used to have a top-heavy roster with a handful of stars that got 70 to 80% of your touches. Now, because of the apron and with the CPA and the way that things have changed salary-wise, building depth has become the thing that you've got to do now and be able to go 9, 10, 11 guys deep and trusting your bench more. And being have guys that your 8, 9, 10, 11, 12s being more involved in the game, being more reliable. Does that reflect how you've seen the NBA change from the time you finished playing to the way it is now?
Yeah, definitely. Some things you mentioned, like in the CBA, it's created a higher turnover. It's a higher job turnover just based on how the contracts are structured, meaning that guys can get to their next contract quicker, but they can also be out the league quicker, depending on those how the season goes for them. That's just an example of that. But then you also have an example of pace. The way the game is played is at a faster pace. So you can't have the freshest bodies if you're playing 82 games in a season at the fastest pace. And each year, it picks up. But when I played, the average NBA score was barely 100 points.
It's still too big. Playing too bigs a lot of times.
Too big, yeah. The pace was slower back in the day. Now there's a higher pace. So the average points, teams are scoring 140 points some nights. 150 points. That's really impressive. And it's within regulation. It's not even like added time some nights. So that definitely correlates to the depth, the word of depth that you used a little bit ago on your depending on your trust level within your players and how your team's structured. Depth may be on your side or depth may not be on your side. And so you just have to, you got to roll with the punches, but that's something to factor in for sure.
So one of the final things I want to ask is just really now going through the career that you've had, again, you've had a successful playing career and now the start of a young coaching career as well. Was there ever a moment, and I ask this first, I'll preface by saying there's always a moment, I feel like, or a situation where you're like, I don't know, like you start to question yourself. Was there ever a moment that you felt like throughout the playing career, throughout the now starting coaching career, that you questioned the journey, but then saw it obviously blossom on the other side? But looking back, did you ever like question and think, this is this what I really want to do? Or was this always set as to what you wanted?
Well, you mean where I'm at now?
Just more going throughout your career. So, like, when you're playing, did you ever have you start to second-guess yourself, should I really be here, or is this actually what I'm supposed to be destined for, and then ultimately going into coaching? The main reason I'm asking is because I feel like a lot of people get into coaching, and they're like, they get that sense of, I don't know if this is what I want to do, or maybe not what you want to do. It's just you don't know if what you're doing is actually working. You know what I mean? And then you see it come out on the other side.
Yeah. I think for me, when I reflect back during my playing journey, I had injury that was very unique. I had a shoulder issue that took a couple of years to figure out. And you play in for your livelihood and you plan to earn a living and continue to grow what you've already set out to achieve. you strive for the best. So I had to play years hurt. So during those years, I managed to think dual consciously, think about life after basketball. So I was actually playing, even around the time where I was majoring, I was doing things behind the scenes that allowed me to be able to understand what it is that I wanted to do versus what I didn't want to do. And playing in the NBA has afforded me the access to incubator programs to be able to understand who I am more so outside the player. I was able to do a coach's program about 7 years ago. I was able to also do a front office program 3 years ago. That's what allowed me to be in the position I'm at now. And so between those two programs, I was able to say, hey, I could coach. I prefer to go back and play and utilize the resource another time. And then the front office program was bestowed upon me. And I was like, hey, I think this is the route that I prefer to be on when the ball stops bouncing. And so that for me, there wasn't anything. Is this what I want to do? I wanted to be around basketball. I wanted to get as close to the preferred area that I wanted to be in around basketball to bring the greatest value, but also to have the greatest sense of peace. And for me, this is where it is. I love player evaluation. Not to say that there's no player evaluation in coaching, but I think in this manner, this fits who I am and who I've groomed and refined. Yeah, I think looking back on it, that's how my journey, when I reflect on it, that's how it came to be.
Yeah, no, I love that, man. Was the one thing I've enjoyed about you, man, is like, and again, I'm here. I came in the Team Nigeria program. You guys didn't know me at all. And thankfully, Coach Brown gave me the opportunity to help out. But I just always remember you being one of the guys that I felt like particularly a good connection with. And that led me to think, this is a guy that knows the importance of relationships. And obviously, here we are 4.5 years later on a pod talking about it. Who would have known? Who would have thought? But were there one or two key relationships along the way that helped you with your transition? Because I think I wish coaches in college did this more, and they don't. And there's probably maybe more that do that we realize. But I think more conversations could be had with players with heading into their last year. Don't wait till spring of a guy's eligibility being over, but helping them understand, let's help you find what you want to do. Let's help you find something you might enjoy that you might want to throw your passion into when the ball stops bouncing. Like you said, was there one or two relationships along the way that kind of helped you with that in terms of making that decision, or was it organic, or how'd that come about?
It was definitely internal. I remember just cold calling, Antonio Daniels, who's a former NBA player, played like 13 years. You know, I watched him grow in this Antonio area when he was with the Spurs. He's always been a great resource for me. And so I had conversations with him that helped me continue to further align myself of how I wanted to implement myself or be viewed at when I was ready. And the NBPA was a great resource for me, and those people on that side just helping me understand how to build a resume and how to like understand just the resources that are available for guys like myself. I was a journeyman, but at the same time, you know, certain guys who've had shorter stints in the NBA, they may not know that certain things are available to them. And it's a real fraternity, so to speak. So I think between those two things, and just, I'm very researcher. I turn over every stone. That's part of the reason why I even made the career that I had, just because I was just relentless in my approach. I went after everything, and grateful for that skill, so to speak. But I just wanted to make sure I didn't sell myself short and overlook anything that was just staring right there in front of me, so to speak. So between those three things, relentlessness, Antonio, and then the MVPA, I think those helped me make the transition that I've made. And just the relationship that I've had just for my entire private career. You just think back on different things, and you may be like, oh, this is a destiny shifter, then they turn out not to be, but this person is. And you just create you know, you just continue to treat people the right way. And, you know, those who are for you, they'll be able to help support you and guide you.
Yeah, no doubt, man. No, I love that. Love it.
So what we like to do is, sticking to the reflection side of things, we usually like to throw out the final question and essentially what that is. Now, I know you are young in your coaching side, so essentially saying going back to your first coaching position would be staying at where you're at. But that being said, if we were to just, like, knowing you were going to get into coaching and the start of your playing career, if there was any advice you would give yourself, knowing what you know now in the start of your career, what advice would you give to not only your younger self, but the younger coaches out there looking to rise in the profession?
Stay true. And stay true to who you are. That's something that that's like my brand. I have some merch that stay true, be you. My initials would be and you, just because of my first and last name. So I would just say that. I think that's something that I echo. I live by. And so that would probably be something simple. It may sound corny, but it's very effective. It's just be yourself, but stay true to who you are and be you.
Yeah, no, I'm a living witness to that, Doug, because I can tell you right now, like 4.5 years later, Ben, you're the exact same dude I shook hands with in Tunisia for the very first time. You're the exact same dude. Now you're doing something different. You've transitioned from playing to being in the front office and with a great organization, an organization that has a great identity, put it that way. But more importantly, you're the same cat that I shook hands with in Tunisia. Dougie's about to wrap this up and land the plane, but personally, I want to say I'm really happy for you. More importantly, I'm proud of you, but I'm not the least bit surprised of what you're doing. Not the least bit surprised, because you are a quality person. And like I said, that first handshake in Tunisia was a firm handshake. And like I said, you're just getting started in this deal. Don't be surprised 5-10 years from now you see Ben Uzo general manager in the NBA. Don't be shocked, people. I'm telling you. I'm saying it now because you're just getting started. But I'm proud of you, man. Really proud of you. And more importantly, appreciate your friendship.
Man, thanks. Thank you. Yeah, thanks a million for those words, man. I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm grateful. Yeah. I met you and know you.
Absolutely. Likewise.
We're definitely looking forward to seeing where you go and where things escalate to, but you're obviously in a great spot now, so enjoy it while you got it. And thank you for honestly being on here and being able to share everything that you've learned. Like I said, you've had a tremendous, not only playing career. I'm a Cavs fan, so I was able to watch you a little bit in Cleveland. I lived in Cleveland at the time, so it's great to be able to connect with you. And nonetheless, being able to just hear your story and see how it's gotten you to where it's gotten you so far. And like I said, you're a young coach, so there's a lot of growth and a lot of opportunity forward. So we're looking forward to seeing that. But again, thank you for sharing some insight. And that does it, everybody, for another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here. All you coaches, keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.